Welcome to episode 21 of Frank Reactions, the podcast where we help you learn how to improve customer experiences to survive and thrive in our digital era. My name is Tema Frank, and I'm your host. Last week, I was in Toronto attending the Customer Experience Strategies Summit, and I recorded several interviews that I'll be bringing you over the next couple of weeks. Today, we're starting with one of the leaders in the customer experience field, Bruce Temkin. He was well known for his work in this field when he worked at Forrester for several years, and 5 years ago, he founded the Temkin Group. We started our interview with discussing the results from their latest research on how different companies are faring when it comes to customer experience. And despite the fact that more and more companies are investing more and more money in improving customer experience, the results didn't really show that that was working. We'll talk about that and many other interesting things, and I'll chat with you briefly at the end of the interview.
I'm Bruce Temkin. I am Managing Partner and Customer Experience Transformist from Temkin Group, but I'm also the Chair and Co-Founder of the Customer Experience Professionals Association.
And when was that association founded? I just joined recently, but when was it?
In 2011.
Oh, so it's still pretty new.
Oh, yeah, we're still pretty young, but we reached scale a lot quicker than we thought. And it's interesting, we're already having to redo our vision because our initial strategic vision we achieved, and which is a cool thing to do for
a young organization.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Okay, so you gave a talk yesterday at the Customer Experience Summit, and you said some things that were very interesting. And the one that really struck me first off was that in your excellent customer experience rankings of companies, this was the first year, I don't remember in how many that you've been doing it, that customer experience on average overall dropped.
Yes.
Can you comment on why you think that has happened?
Yeah, first of all, it's been 5 years.
5 years, okay.
And in every year up until this year, a majority of companies and a majority of industries got better. This year, a majority of companies and a majority of industries got worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's really two ways you can think about it. One is that despite all the energy and effort that companies are putting into customer experience, that suddenly this last year, they just dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I find that hard to believe because everything that we find shows that companies are putting more effort, and you know, just from our work and looking at lots of companies, they're actually getting better at the practice of customer experience. So the discipline's getting better. So I think the second explanation is probably the more plausible one, which is that consumer expectation has started to rise faster than companies are making improvements.
Yep.
So what we see is not really a drop in the absolute experience that consumers are getting,
right,
but a drop relative to their expectations. And mm-hmm. So when you think about the future, to succeed, it's not only how you're going to do relative to your competitors, but how effectively you're keeping up with your very fast-growing customer expectations.
And this is one of the reasons why benchmarking against competitors is not the way to go.
Exactly. Yeah, you can be just as good as your competitors and still fall behind. And what's interesting, I think this is going to happen in some industries, when you have industries that have traditionally had some level of meeting their customer expectations and they start to drop collectively,
mm-hmm.
that really opens up a window of new competitors to enter into the field in the industry, focusing on now a wider gap
mm-hmm.
between what the companies are delivering and what the customers expect. So customer experience actually might create a new round of competitive entrants into different markets, which would be kind of cool to watch.
Absolutely, and I think that will happen, certainly. And it's interesting because one of the things I've noticed in your rankings and others is traditional or typically the companies or categories that do worst are those that are regulated industries where there are fewer competitors.
Yes. I if you look at the bottom of the list, a lot of them have what I would call some form of monopoly.
Yeah.
Either they're monopolies because they have a controlled region, or like in healthcare, they're monopolies because historically their distribution channel was, we'll sell to employers, and once we have an employer on board, then we're a monopoly for all their employees.
Right.
So they all operated without really the sense of need around competition. And in all of the industries, they're getting more and more competitive. So if you put that together, right, every one of those industries is getting more competitive.
Yep.
And customer expectations are rising. So it's a fun time to be in the field.
Absolutely. One of the things that also struck me is you said that you started off as an engineer. And it sounds like over time,
time, you've become more and more interested in the importance of the softer side of getting employees motivated and the human aspects. How did you make that change? And like, what led to that change? And how do you encourage others to make that change?
In other words, you're saying, how could an engineer possibly understand the emotional side of customer
experience? Well, I got to be careful. I'm married to an engineer, but
so you know, it's interesting. So I when I first sort of got involved in this field in general, my involvement was really looking at complex processes and doing sort of a lot of left brain stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Strategy and processes. And then I started to manage a group who were focused on like user experience and a lot of the softer skills. And I realized that the way to improve customer experience was a balance of both.
Yeah.
You need to do left brain and right brain. And I am absolutely positively high on the left brain side.
Mm-hmm.
And so my understanding of the need for right brain things has forced me to learn it. But I think that's an important for everyone, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people will generally fall on one scale or side or the other. So I think that in customer experience, the people that have a natural right brain tendency need to enhance their discipline and some of their analytical side on the left brain.
Yep.
And the left brain people like me need to understand, appreciate, and build out their recognition, use, and understanding of the right brain, some of the what people would call softer skills. Because you can't improve customer experience if you don't have the analysis and discipline of the left brain.
Yep.
And you can't do it if you don't have the caring and emotional understanding of the right brain.
Right. That makes perfect sense. So at this stage in your career, in your business, I presume companies that come to you already buy into the importance of customer experience and the softer side. How did you deal with that in the early stage of building your business? Like,
so, it's interesting. So I've been, even before our business, the Temkin Group is about 5 years old, but
okay.
I've been doing this even before that with Forrester for maybe the last 15 years, right?
Right.
So it wasn't an issue for building our business because
right.
in the last 5 years, we pretty much are a magnet for large companies that want to transform their experience, right?
Yeah.
So, and there are enough of them around that mm-hmm. keeps us really busy.
Yeah.
So I'd say the issue was more early on where it was less about talking about customer experience and more talking about how can companies retain customers. So I got really busy when I was at Forrester during the recession about 2008. I don't remember back. It's sort of a painful
memory.
Oh,
I certainly remember.
Yeah. And my area was robust and growing rapidly. Every other area around seemed to be declining. I had a robust business as people were coming because what we were doing was explaining in an environment of shrinking customers that the thing you need to focus on is the thing that's going to protect those smaller number of customers, and there's nothing better than customer experience in retention.
Yep.
Right? So in a pure retention mode, you really do have to think about customer experience. So build out from that. And so we didn't talk about the soft side of experience.
Right.
Right? We talked about the things you needed to do, and it still is an interesting stuff. I find, so when I'm working with individual companies
mm-hmm.
or individual executives, it's really important that you understand what are the things that they're comfortable talking
right.
about, right? Like if I go into a financial services company that's a really analytical environment and I come in and talking about you have to make an emotional connection, that's probably not the lead,
sure.
right? And I try to teach customer experience professionals, whether they're left brain or right brain, whether their bias is going to be talking about like, you know, the left or right brain stuff, that you really need to think about who's the audience, who's the executive that you're trying to influence,
mm-hmm.
and not talk the way you want to talk, but understand what they really want to hear and need to hear to change their environment. And I think, to me, that's been an ability that I've built over time, which is my understanding to somewhat think outside myself,
yes.
right, and really look at an environment, almost be detached from it,
mm-hmm.
so that I can understand what the environment is and who the people are who getting messages, who the people who need to be influenced. Just trying to figure out what messages work for influencing different people.
I mean, it's interesting your comments about the recession because a lot of companies, I think, when there is a slide economically, they just lay people off. Massive cutbacks aren't going to solve the problem. They may solve the next quarter statements, but they're not going to solve the problem.
Yeah.
So what do you find are typically the most compelling arguments that work to convince companies that this is something that's worth investing in?
Well, I think it's interesting because I think you you described one of the two ways to deal with, like, recession problems, right? If you think about recession, you're trying to maintain some amount of your return on investment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can focus on the denominator,
yeah.
Or you can, what's the top of it?
Numerator.
The numerator or the denominator, right? People do jump to the denominator. Let's keep cutting our costs.
Right.
And so what you could try and convince people of is, yes, you can do that, but what kind of business are you left with? Right. And so the smarter companies, and during the recession, I wrote a lot about this and looked at this. There were smarter companies who focused on said, okay, yes, we know we're going to have to apply some discipline. Like we just can't spend like crazy. But if we focused our energy on holding our customers, investing in the numerator, we actually will have a stronger business now and an even stronger business when we come out of the recession. Because what happens is that if you go into a recession cutting your denominator, cutting your costs and being really cost-based, the recession ends and you have an unhappy workforce, you have poor processes, you have things broken because they're underfunded, there are systems that don't work, and you don't come out of the recession with any momentum at all. Whereas if you focused on the numerator and you're focusing on your customers and you continue to do that, then not only have you held on to a larger portion of your customer base through the recession, but when you come out, you are flying compared to your competitors. And pretty much every recession we've always had ends, and it ends in less than 2 years. So any executive that has any horizon that's at least 2 years should be able to see that.
Yeah. I live in Alberta, so the whole oil price drop is affecting a lot of businesses there. So it's interesting to watch that play out. So in your last comment, you mentioned the risks of employees being demoralized and not happy. And in your talk, you said one of the most important things is to hire people who are by nature happy people.
Hire happy people.
Absolutely. So how do you test for that in an interview?
Yeah, so well, first of all, I think no one really does that. And the reason why I think it's important to hire happy people is that empathy, which you really want to have from your employees, is something that is heightened when people are happy, right? If I'm unhappy, even if I'm an empathetic person, I can't care about you if I'm unhappy, right? You start to be very internally focused. And so I think that there are a number of ways. One of the things is just in a normal interview, have people describe their previous job, right? And look at the adjectives that they use. Right there, you can do this left brain or right brain, right?
Yeah.
If you want to be left brain, you can think about, all right, count down the number of adjectives they use and see which ones you'd put into sort of happy, unhappy, and neutral.
Interesting.
Right? And it's probably not going to be a lot unhappy, but there will likely be a lot of neutral, not happy stuff. So one is the way people describe their world gives a good indication of their natural inclination. And so if you can get them to describe things in the past, describe the projects they worked on, and get them out of their normal script, or not sort of the first question, but have some follow-up questions that catch them a little bit off guard, and see how they describe those situations. It's not a perfect indicator, but if you start looking for it, and you start going from today where you're not looking at it and you're randomly hiring 60% of the people who are happy, but if you start looking at it and you can hire 75 or 80% of people happy, not perfect, you get a big bang in the productivity and the empathy level of your employees just by doing that.
Interesting. When I think about that, I don't know if you're familiar with Jankoa and their Dream Manager program.
Oh, no, that sounds kind of interesting. I need to look at that.
I'll send you a link. I've got a podcast where I interviewed the CEO there. But it's a janitorial services company. And they, as Mary Miller said, the CEO, she said, nobody grows up wanting to be a janitor. And what they ultimately realized was part of the reason they were struggling with turnover and not great service initially was these people weren't happy. Their lives were miserable. And so they created this Dream Manager program to get people dreaming of a better future and help them achieve that better future. It's a really interesting program.
Oh, that is very cool.
Yeah, I'll send you the link.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other thing that you said that I thought was very interesting, you gave the analogy of the cost of producing a movie and how you don't focus on the cost per minute as a flat thing. You invest more in the real wow moments. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I always, one of the things I try to do when I'm talking to at events like this or talking to companies is try to break them for what I think are really bad traditional management practices. And one of the really bad traditional management practices is sort of average funding, right? We have 10 projects and $100 million, they each get $10 million. We have 20 people and whatever. And a movie, if you think about a movie, I like to use the analogy, if I had a $100 million movie, which is sort of a blockbuster I'm going to spend, and a movie's average 100 minutes, no producer, no director would ever go in and say, we're going to spend $1 million a minute on the movie and treat every minute of that movie like it was the same.
Mm-hmm.
What they realize and what customer experience professionals need to realize is that you have to overinvest in some memorable moments, because if I had a movie that had no memorable moments and spend $1 million a minute, no one would go to it. But if I can spend $50 million on a 3-minute segment of it, which no one in corporate America would do, right, spend half of your budget on 3% of the things,
right.
But they recognize that that moment, those 3 minutes, can be the difference between people remembering and referring this movie, and it's worth that investment.
Yeah.
So to me, the analogy is that we need to think more about what our customers are going to remember, either positively or negatively, and disproportionately invest our money and time in those areas, even if it means, which it will mean, is we have to under-focus on other areas. And that's the part that I think we have to really get disciplined about, which is, in order for us to say we need to focus on some moments more than others, we have to be willing to focus less on other things. And part of what I try to instill in discipline around customer experience is we can't always say more, more, more.
Right.
That the real discipline comes from making smart trade-offs. And smart trade-off is focusing more on the moments that matter, which means in order to keep your funding at the same level and to keep the resources at the same level, you have to consciously decide to focus less in other areas.
That makes sense. What's a reasonable expectation? And one of the issues that I keep hearing is that part of the reason companies are reluctant to invest in customer experience is they're, especially public companies, focused on next quarter's numbers, whereas changing the ship in terms of customer experience takes some time.
Yep.
How fast can one reasonably expect to see some kind of results?
That's sort of a trick question, right? Because because you're right. I think a lot of the results that you might see can take a long period of time, but that's sort of what you would expect from any strategic decisions that a leader would make, right? So if you think about leading an organization, whether it's public or private, right, whether it's held to the quarterly standards or not, you expect those leaders to do a combination of deliver now, but also make trade-offs that will keep that organization robust into the future.
Right.
And I do believe that customer experience is an important part, actually, for both. So I do think that you can make smart decisions about investments now that will generate shorter-term gains, along with longer-term stuff like investments in culture and investments in infrastructure that will make things easier for customers or employees to treat customers in the long term. But I don't think customer experience changes that dynamic. Mm-hmm. I think organizations and leaders have to always balance short-term and long-term.
Yeah.
And my hope is that the investors in companies, right, the board of directors of companies, those that are driving the management teams will get more enlightened and look for longer term types of strategies. But at the flip side, you can't run an organization where you're always investing for something that's going to have a return in the future, that never delivering endpoint.
Yeah.
So it's always going to be a balance. I do think your question is the right one, which is that there is more of an emphasis in most management systems on shorter-term returns.
Right.
And hopefully we can help change that.
Yeah. And I guess part of it, too, is looking for the low-hanging fruit, the easy, quick projects that can provide some quick wins.
Yeah, and there's always, you know, some of the areas that always have quick wins are just taking care of the situations where you have really bad experiences and customers leave, right? And so if we can shore up some of those things, oftentimes that will deliver money you can invest for the future.
Right, yeah, okay. Is there anything else I should have asked you and I haven't?
Well, you could have asked me about the Customer Experience Professional Association, where you can find out more about
Absolutely. Tell
and
us more at your conference
that,
coming up.
And if you had asked that, I'd say go to cxpa.org.
Yep.
Did you hear those? Again, let me repeat it.
cxpa.org. Yep.
Yeah. Lots of cool things there. One is our upcoming event every year. We have our Insight Exchange this year in San Diego. We have one in the UK. So going back and forth. But also, I think, if you look at my title, I have four letters after my title, CCXP, which means I'm a certified customer experience professional, and that is a certification that the association created this year, and it's a reflection, it's our goal to reflect the people in the profession who have the experience and the dedication to it and can pass the test.
Right.
So two things to look at, cxpa.org and ccxp.org to find out about the certification. And that would be great.
Sounds great. Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I think there are three really practical takeaways from that interview. First, if you're trying to sell somebody on improving customer experience or really anything else in the executive suite, lead with the left brain or right brain bias of the executive you're trying to influence. I guess that's not that surprising, but sometimes it's hard for people who are really strongly one way or the other to do a presentation that combines both or that really focuses on what the person they're speaking to is interested in. Second, hire happy people. Possibly easier said than done, although he did have some ideas on how you might be able to identify them. I think another way of phrasing it is hire people who tend to be optimistic as opposed to pessimistic, and you can probably get at that a bit in an interview. And three, overinvest in the wow moments. Next week, I'll be interviewing Lou DeAngeli, who is a former WWE wrestler and marketer, and now Cirque du Soleil's Senior Director of Marketing and Public Relations. Next week, I'll be interviewing Lou DeAngeli, who is a former WWE wrestler and marketer, and is now the Cirque du Soleil's Senior Director of Marketing and Public Relations. Now, obviously, the Cirque du Soleil is all about customer experience, and I think he totally agree with Bruce Temkin's idea of overinvesting in the wow moments. Mind you, in a Cirque show, they're pretty well all wow moments, and I'm actually looking forward to taking in a Cirque show when I'm in Las Vegas for New Media Expo in a couple of weeks. With his WWE World Wrestling Entertainment, for those who don't know these things, which I didn't until my son told me a few years ago, we actually start our interview talking about the similarities and differences in marketing something like Cirque du Soleil and the WWE. You'll hear all about that in next week's episode. We've put together transcripts and customer experience advice from some of our former guests on Frank Reactions, and you can access those free by signing up at frankreactions.com. If you go there, just click on the blue book cover or buttons below it on the right, and you will get signed up for a series of emails, each with a transcript and some tips based on what that interview subject had to say. Or if you don't want to bother heading over to the website, although I really think you should because there's lots of good stuff there, but if you don't have time or don't want to right now, you can just email me Tema, T-E-M-A, M as in marketing, at frankreactions.com. I'll chat with you next week. Bye.